My place in tech changes every day, but I don't fear the future because I'm with the leader, Pluralsight. Their online learning platform has the hands-on, expert-led courses I need to master new tech skills and create bigger impacts so I can learn quickly and stay ahead. With Pluralsight, I don't fear what's next. I embrace it. Tap in at Pluralsight.com and see for yourself.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Welcome to the Sean Atwood channel. I am Lauren the Insider, and I am delighted to be joined by Andrew Loney, the voice that we all need to be listening to when it comes to Epstein, the cover-up, Andrew, Fergie, and the Royals. Here we are again, Andrew. Well, I love talking to you, but I always wish it wasn't under such terrible circumstances, because here we go again with cover-ups and lies.
Yes, well, I mean, it's been a busy few weeks. I mean, we've had the leaked emails on both Fergie and Andrew showing that their links with Epstein went on much longer than they claimed, that, you know, they're liars, basically. We've now had Virginia Giuffre's memoir, which, to be honest, is not that different from the Billionaire Playboy Club, which she wrote herself many years ago. It's now been kind of smoothed over with by Amy Wallace, the ghostwriter. But it is still pretty shocking to see some of the things in there. I mean, not least the fact that Andrew knew how young she was. Now, one of the things that interested me was that the third time that she saw Andrew was, she thinks, on the island on the 4th of July, 2001. So she had these meetings in March, April, and then July. If you look at the court circular that day, they claim that he was in Hampshire. But if you look at the flight logs, Lolita flight logs, he was indeed on the island. So one wonders, are Buckingham Palace actually creating false court circulars in order to cover his movements and actually aiding his activities? And I think Buckingham Palace needs to come clean on that.
That's the thing, isn't it? Because Buckingham Palace are now as bad, I would argue, as Andrew in this, because they are lying and they are covering this up. This could have been dealt with swiftly and quickly, but because they have continued to cover and lie and enable this predator, and I don't want to say allegedly, because why would we not believe Virginia and the way that Andrew has lied? I now have no trust in anything he says. But the palace are part of the problem, not the solution in this.
Yes, I agree. I mean, you know, we've seen it with the Church of England. I mean, we saw Justin Welby actually go as a result of him not doing things with John Smythe. And it's the same with the palace. I mean, I do recount in entitled, you know, the cases where the palace would put pressure on journalists, deny stories, find that they were true, then threaten legal action. They'd use the pressure on people, for example, like ABC television, to prevent them writing stories about Giuffre and Epstein and Andrew by denying them access to, for example, the Prince and Princess of Wales. I wonder what they feel about how they were used there. And time and time again, I know that people went to complain to the palace about Andrew's activities and they were given short shrift. So I agree. I mean, if they dealt with this properly at the beginning and got ahead of the story rather than reacting very slowly and actually doing very little, they wouldn't them now themselves be part of the problem. This is now, in the case of the last few weeks, become, I would say, a crisis for the monarchy. I mean, probably on par with the abdication crisis now. So it's only going to get bigger. We're going to have more victims coming forward. We're going to have more Epstein material released. I think there are going to be more embarrassing disclosures about Andrew. And they should be very worried at the palace. Charles has been incredibly weak about this. I mean, Andrew and Fergie had been relegated. They'd been sent out. Prince Philip would have nothing to do with them. And then for some strange reason, they were brought back into the fold. There was Fergie in the royal box at Wimbledon, at Sandringham, at Ascot, having her hand kissed. I mean, what planet is the king on? When I suspect they knew a lot of this material. And I think the view is that actually if they just do nothing, the news agenda will move on and they'll be okay. But I don't think that's going to work any longer. I think people really want to see something happening. They feel that Andrew needs to explain himself, as does Sarah Ferguson, and there needs to be a proper investigation into their activities, not just the links with Epstein, but actually the financial activities of Andrew and Sarah, and how they were able to continue to monetize their position as members of the royal family for their own personal gain for literally 40 years. And, you know, I think questions are now being asked about King Charles's own financial affairs and the way that people have charities he's basically done cash for honours for certain charities. So I think this investigation is getting bigger. I'm doing a piece in the Sunday Times this weekend about royal transparency and accountability, which I've banged on about for the last 10 years. No one listened to me. I think finally people are waking up to this, that actually something needs to be done and the monarchy is in real trouble.
Yeah, and this is just going to get worse and worse, because actually what we're seeing from King Charles is... it's like when you're naughty and your parents say sorry, sorry. He's not sorry. He didn't want to do anything about this. His hand is being forced from public pressure and people are turning against the monarchy. And it's incredibly unfair on the Prince of Wales as well, who will inherit this monarchy, that King Charles is just... we're just watching it fall apart in front of our eyes. And, you know, I'm sure if they took a little bit of money here and there, I'd be furious, but I'd probably get over it. But we are now talking about the abuse of minors with Andrew. We are talking about the fact him going onto the BBC, which many, many people fund through their TV license. I would cancel it, everyone, but anyhow. And then he's lying to us there and nothing is being done because they think we will forget, because they think we're all little peasants at home that won't remember. That's how it looks like to me. What can we do, Andrew? Is it about keeping our eyes on the facts and you know, following people like you and holding them accountable in any way we can?
Well, there are lots of things that people can do, and there are lots of things that the royal family can do. And what one needs to do is put the pressure on the royal family through the media through social media, but I think principally through the media, and also perhaps writing to MPs. But, you know, for example, there were arguments 20 years ago for a royal register where people like Sarah Ferguson would have to register their business interests. I mean, we have members of the royal family, including the Queen, who had offshore accounts, which, you know, doesn't seem very good when we're meant to be paying taxed, in effect, to the Crown. And I think we should be pushing for a royal register. I mean, it's only as good as the way it's implemented, but it's at least Parliament has that. I think we need to get the royals out of their exemption in the Freedom of Information Act. We need to actually have MPs and members of the House of Lords are allowed to ask questions, as a tradition that there's no parliamentary scrutiny of the royals. Well, I think if there had been, if people had been able to ask questions about Andrew's links to Epstein and his time as special trade envoy, perhaps they wouldn't have felt they could get away with things. I think there needs to be an investigation into the royal finances, which would include his time as a royal trade envoy. And I do think that he and Sarah need to offer themselves up to the victims' lawyers and to the FBI as people of material interest who can help them in their investigations. I also think we need a big apology from both of them. Maybe time for another Newsnight interview with them actually telling the truth about their links to Epstein and the way that they've abused their position as royals. So that's from that side. And I think Charles needs to be decisive. He needs to get rid of Andrew's titles. Perfectly easy thing to do through Parliament. I think he's still an honorary vice admiral. That can go. Knight of the Garter can go very easily. It's been done plenty of times before. And he certainly shouldn't be a councillor of state. So, I mean, there are plenty of things they can do to address this and address public disquiet about what's going on. I'd also like a bit more openness about the Duchy of Cornwall and Lancaster. They always sidestep this. We've had Channel 4 and Sunday Times doing investigations, some pretty shocking allegations there. Again, no response from the palace and the hope that if they say nothing, everyone will forget. But as you say, I think people have got to the stage where they no longer want to forget. And the danger is we're going to see the monarchy. I don't think we're going to see it go, but we're going to see it severely diminished, weakened, put into disrepute, all because of the actions, first of Andrew and Sarah, and now, frankly, of the king.
I think as well that the monarchy always were able to control what we thought previously because we would go to the mainstream media and consume and digest that news. But the power the mainstream media has now is rapidly going downhill. And so this is a prime example of where, because the industry has shifted and people are going online and finding independent journalists and people like yourself, Andrew, we're able to actually get the truth, because we know as well that King Charles and Queen Camilla have a lot of contacts, very much at the top of the media chain. And so we're not getting the truth from these people.
Well, I'd go halfway with you on that. But actually, if you think that the two of the big disclosures of the last month have both been come from the Mail on Sunday, the leaked email about Fergie and the leaked email about Andrew. And that's what's really kick-started everything in the last month. And that's the Mail on Sunday. So I would dispute that. I mean, you're absolutely right. There are very close links, particularly between the Mail and the King. I mean, the former member of staff is now the press secretary. And other papers, you know, the Sun is very friendly with Fergie and won't say anything critical. But to their credit, the Mail Sunday have run two pieces which have emboldened the news agenda. And we have had newspapers piling in, asking questions, being much more robust in what they said. I mean, for example, Times have been running stories, you know, arguing exactly what I've been saying, that many of these titles should be removed. And, you know, I hope maybe in a small part, you know, entitled coming out in August has kick-started some of this, that people now feel that more confident about doing something. So I don't share your concern quite so much. I think the mainstream media are playing their part. But you're absolutely right. You know, there is now a pluralistic media. There are plenty of other places to get information. And I think as a result of that, people, maybe the mainstream media have had to raise their, improve their act.
Yeah, I think it's important to flag, though, that people like Virginia suffered for so long in silence because the mainstream media were in cahoots with the palace and were playing a very tight game of controlling news and squashing stories. And we saw it with ABC as well. So I think it's really important now that people understand they have to work hard for their news. And I would argue they would get a hell of a lot more truth in your book than they would still in a national newspaper when it comes to the royals, because you are diligent and you are going against the grain. You know, there is nothing about an approved narrative with you.
Well, I mean, that, you know, it's true. I mean, this clearly is an unauthorized biography. But, you know, the Mail gave it a 5-day serial. I mean, that again, you know, taking out many of the things I've put in there. And without the Mail, you know, I wouldn't have, in a sense, had the reach I've had in the book. It could easily have been, you know, everyone could have ignored it. So I think, you know, let's give credit where it's due. And, you know, I have had publicity. I mean, the broadsheets have done podcasts and done reviews. So I'm slightly less critical and concerned than you, because I think now there has been a mood change. I think it's perhaps the press following public opinion. They can see the comments below the news articles and just see how angry people are. I've been going out pretty much every night doing festivals and talks, and I'm, you know, going to rural Britain, you know, full of the crusty colonels. And it's the crusty colonels who are coming up and saying, you know, this is wrong. And, you know, indeed, many of the people who talked to me for the book were very senior diplomats and naval officers who were appalled at the way that Andrew had been allowed to get away with it, because no one in authority, and this goes right back to the palace, but even at the top of the Foreign Office and elsewhere, were actually dealing with Andrew. I think it's very interesting that, you know, the line that Virginia Giuffre uses in her book is entitled, which is the title clearly of my book. And there has been this sense all the way through that you know, he could get away with it, that no one would do anything. You know, these stories, many of them are 30 years old and never emerged. And so there are a lot of people who've been protecting the royals who I think should be reconsidering their, you know, looking at their conscience and perhaps reconsidering whether they should actually now come out and tell us what they know.
Have you had a lot more sources come forwards for the paperback in light of all of this other information breaking into the mainstream media regarding Andrew and Virginia?
Yes, I've had a lot of stuff. I mean, people who get in touch with me, because I mean, I leave an email address in the book and people can Google me and find me. And almost every time I go out and give a talk, there is someone who has some connection with the people I'm writing about and has some story about them and is prepared to talk about them. So, yes, I've got an enormous amount of new material. Many people I'd never even knew about, episodes I had no idea about. And I have to say, it is a lot worse than I thought. So, if we think the hardback's bad, that the paperback is going to be even more damaging.
And do you think your publishing legal team will allow, you know, more to go through? Because obviously we know that 20 pages were removed for the hardback. But obviously you're now in a situation where the legal team removed information. But we can see yet again that Andrew has lied and Sarah has lied. And we've got Virginia's book coming out as well. Will that strengthen your cause to get more across the line into the public domain?
Yes, I hope so. I mean, one of the reasons that some of the stuff was cut was that they were worried that about the source. And the source has now been proved completely correct. So, for example, I had material on Mandelson, which they took out, which clearly can go back in. And I think now that there's a more of a trust of this particular source who's been proved correct in every stage, I think that some of that material will be reinstated. You know, clearly there are bullies around like Prince Harry and President Trump who try and undermine these books by basically slapping writs on you. But it's interesting, neither of them pursued their action. It's all big talk. They leaked to the press and then nothing happens. And so, again, I hope that the publishers will be emboldened by that to see these are just trials and that they should sort of face them down.
Yeah, it's just writing a check and trying to give you a little, you know, tap on the hand, get back in your box. But we are the media, Andrew, and we will not get back in our box. We will continue to tell the truth. Now, on that note, my X account is full of people asking me the same question. And I wonder if you can put an end to this and explain it. Did Meghan Markle know Jeffrey Epstein before she met Harry? There's lots and lots of reports about her being a yacht girl and various different allegations. And obviously we know that if you are a yacht girl, it's very hard for anyone to prove it, because that is why, that is how certain elites behave. Has that come up at all in your research or from any sources?
Well, I mean, I've seen the accounts. I've not seen anything that's persuasive. I mean, the pictures, for example, they show are of a trip in January 2001, I think, on a boat in Thailand with Nellie Hooper and Jenny Frost and others. And Meghan isn't there. I've not come across any references to Meghan and Epstein in this period, but there's an awful lot about Epstein that we don't know. And we know that Andrew met Epstein probably at least 10 years earlier than he says, but there's very little coverage of that. We had Beatrice Kuhl, the former Miss Switzerland, saying that one of the inducements to her when she was introduced to or met Epstein was that she could meet Prince Andrew. This was 1993, and he said he met Epstein in 1999. The one thing that I have said, and I think what I just discussed with you last time, is someone, a source in Thailand, has come forward who I don't think knew any of these stories and has talked about links between Andrew and Meghan in Thailand. And that's clearly where the two... where Andrew used to go and play. Where he had his, I mean, yeah, he just spent a lot of free time there. He used to often stay with a man called Johan Eliash. So it's a question of trying to find evidence of his movements in Thailand at a time when Meghan was there and whether they could have met. We do have, you know, clearly people like David Boies is saying that he would call Meghan to give evidence. So he clearly knows something, but he's not saying anything at the moment about that. But yeah, if we can, you know, place her and Andrew at the same time, whether it's in Thailand or elsewhere, much earlier than everyone assumes, then that would be interesting. I mean, you know, she claims that she didn't even know who Prince Andrew was, which is ridiculous, because I don't think you could, you know, open a newspaper.
Well, she claims she didn't know anything about the Blimmin' Royal Family, didn't she?
Yes, she's exactly. And then we have pictures of her in front of Buckingham Palace. So, you know, here is another, I'm afraid, serial liar. The question is trying to get evidence, and no one has produced it. I would love to hear from them if they have evidence, but it all is very circumstantial. And I say none of the photographic evidence stands up. There's certainly a very interesting connection with Marcus Anderson. Clearly, he's a great Svengali figure in her life. But again, I haven't linked Marcus Anderson to Andrew. Having said that, there's a man called Ron Burkle, who is part of Soho House. And I have linked Ron Burkle to Andrew and to clearly to Meghan Markle. So Ron Burkle may be the key.
Was also, or is also, the godfather, I believe, of Diddy's children. It's a very, Ron Burkle had a flat above the Soho House in East London. Can you remember what it's called? I don't go out, so I'm not very good socially at that, naming the places, but it's in East London. And I know from a contact that worked at Soho House, he had his own entrance. Private entrance.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I do know that, I mean, where the Royals seem to do also a great place where they used to go and play was Toronto. So if any of your listeners or watchers have any information about what the Royals were up to, certainly Prince Philip did stuff there, and certainly Prince Andrew, they used to use a hotel called the Windsor Arms to entertain their girlfriends. So again, if people have any information there, that may help fill in the gaps in the puzzle. So it's in some ways the great thing is with social media is there are people who will come forward who have little insights, perhaps who worked there or saw them or heard stories, and that's how we can kind of begin to find out what's really happened. But there are huge gaps, as I say, in Epstein and Andrew's life in the 1990s, which I'd love to fill in.
And that's also a really hard time to fill in as well, because it, you know, there aren't digital footprints like we have now. And so this is where people on the ground, we need you coming forwards if you have information and coming to Andrew, because this could really be, you know, the final pieces of the puzzle. Where are you with your sourcing in Thailand? Is that in development to try and get it over the line with the Meghan allegations they've said?
Well, I have a couple of sources in Thailand. I mean, one a Reuters journalist, one a former diplomat there, one a member of the Thai royal family, and then actually another sort of Thai socialite. But, you know, clearly if there's anyone, I mean, again, one of my sources was somebody who worked for the Department of Trade and Industry who was responsible for some of Andrew's trips to Thailand. But there may be people who went to some of these resorts. He used to go to the Annapurna resort quite a lot. So if there are people who can add to this story, that would be fantastic. I mean, I did a podcast where someone came forward and was a dog walker who saw Fergie coming out of one of Epstein's flats several years after she claimed to cut off contact. So that was a fantastic new element to the story from this woman who came forward called Coco P. So I'm always grateful to watchers, you know, who do have something to add. Or questions that they can raise. You know, someone has made the point that Eugenie runs a charity called the Anti-Slavery Collective. She has large sums of money that she's raised, and yet she spends very little. It's a small donation to her mother's charity. So at a time when they're laundering their reputation, saying that they're doing as much as they can to support trafficked women, here is an opportunity which they're not really taking advantage of. And someone on social media pointed out that the grooming gangs in Britain would be a very obvious area to be able to give money to and perhaps help. You know, people come up with some good ideas on social media. And people are always free to direct message me on Twitter.
I think as well, this is so great, Andrew, because, you know, for so long, we the people have felt silenced and downtrodden, and that, you know, when it comes to the grooming gangs, our king has been absolutely silent. And all we hear as well is, oh, well, it's a ceremonial role, that. Well, is there never a better time to change your role and pivot than to advocate for innocent children? And we've seen it with Andrew and the treatment of Virginia. I think it's about time King Charles pulls his socks up and starts advocating for the innocent children in this country. And we're not
from him. What he's doing behind the scenes. I mean, you know, clearly there's a long tradition of black spidery letters. I think he's got to be very careful as king. Constitutionally, he can't be seen to interfere in politics. It's a bit easier as Prince of Wales, and actually the Prince of Wales has come forward, for example, talking about Gaza and the humanitarian tragedy going on there. He was heavily criticised for it. But, you know, who knows what's going on behind the scenes? You know, they do go out and support the victims. We saw that, for example, with Edward and Sophie, I think, going up to Southport. So I think, you know, let's give them a break, you know, in some respects. You know, the dealing with this is actually a matter for the government. And I think the government has failed there. I mean, there's been a huge cover up by police forces and by the political establishment. And I think the king has to be careful about what he does get involved with. It always has to be in terms of supporting the victims rather than actually criticising the crime.
But it is his government as well. And, it, you know, the fact that so many people on the ground are having to scream to get this investigated, you know, I think is a tragedy. But I wanted to touch base with you about Virginia's book coming out. We are just starting to see stories come out and be leaked about it. How do you think the palace will proactively react and deal with what's to come?
Well, they, I mean, the council I've seen claim that they're taking it seriously. But I think the problem is it's all words and no actions. So, you know, they're making sympathetic noises, but actually nothing really is happening. I mean, Andrew's still got his shooting rights, for example. So, I mean, they, as I said earlier, there are lots of things they could do. There's no sign of them actually doing it. So it just seems to be smoke and mirrors, which is the way they operate. You know, they'll claim to do certain, you know, that they're concerned and they're monitoring and they'll address it. But actually, when it comes to it, nothing ever happens. And that is their sort of way of operating. You know, basically, when they don't know what to do, they do nothing.
Mm. And obviously, you uncovered a lot about Mandelson, which you had to remove from the book, but it will be in the paperback. Are there more Mandelsons that we don't know about?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there are other figures in Britain like that. I mean, people who are drawn to power and powerful people and making money. And possibly, you know, could be sexually compromised. You know, Virginia Giuffre herself has talked about some of the people that she was trafficked to, which included a lot of academics, for example. We've always assumed that the academics around and philanthropists around Epstein were there just because he was supporting their charities and their academic research. But it now looks like there was a sort of quid pro quo there, too. You know, there have been people, I think, in Congress who've begun to hint at some of the names that may emerge, you know, politicians, businessmen and others. I think we're certainly going to get the American side of the story out. I mean, this is a huge story. It was a huge network. There were thousands of girls. There were many, many people involved. The focus has always been on Andrew because we had Virginia Giuffre as a sort of cheerleader. But some of the other victims have come forward. I mean, there were the 10 on Capitol Hill only a few weeks ago. You know, there were these women, I think there were 40 young girls who were prepared to testify in 2005. You know, they are now clearly much more grown up. But if they were prepared to come forward, some of those people, and name names, then, you know, we might see some justice for them. I think the problem is that these men are rich, powerful, litigious. They've managed to keep their names out of the press for the last 30 years. Clearly, Epstein cannot now spill the beans. The great white hope is Ghislaine, but Ghislaine has done her bit. She's kind of got Trump off the hook. And she may just feel that it's not safe for her to say much more. But I think the interesting thing is these leaked emails appear to come from Ghislaine. The person who's writing the articles is Daphne Barrick, who is a very close connection with Ghislaine, did the interview with her in prison. So that seems to be where it's coming. But we've also got the Jess Slaley trial. There seem to be leaks from that trial because Jess Slaley is one of the people connected. There are now stories about him having slept with girls, as well as being very much part of the financial sort of network with Epstein and Andrew. I mean, we have to remember that Andrew used some of his royal perks, like the royal box at the Victoria now at the V&A, at the Royal Albert Hall, to entertain people like from J.P. Morgan and Morgan Stanley. He hosted dinners at Buckingham Palace, and ostensibly these were part of his role as a trade envoy and then for pitch at the palace. But of course, they were very useful to have these contacts. These are contacts that he himself has used, and indeed he's passed on to his daughters, who are beginning to exploit them themselves. So we had Beatrice, for example, promoting a Saudi bank the other day. We've had her given this pretty high-powered position in with Avanti, dealing with AI and women in business and stuff. All those things have come because of the connections that her father has basically handed her, not from any great efforts that she's made or Avanti have made. And so we see, you know, but this is standard practice in sort of the celebrity world of having Nepo children.
Yeah, exactly. They just, you know, we're not doing anything. We'll just hand you that silver plate and, you know, you go and close those deals. Do you, have you been getting any people come to you with an indication of how Sarah and Andrew have reacted post your book coming out? Because we know they've done everything to try and slander you, don't we?
Yes, I mean, they're concerned about the book, and there have been a big attempts. You know, I understand that someone, an Arab billionaire, has paid a PR firm to try and undermine the book and undermine, and for example, use bots to give it negative reviews on Amazon, things like that. So, you know, there is a concerted campaign to try and diminish the book. I mean, all one can hope is that the power of the people who've read the book, and actually what's interesting is the reviews are all 5 stars, the ratings that are very low.
So what can we ask the Sean Atwood viewers to do then, Andrew? How can we fight back against this billionaire trying to slander you? Where do you need them to go and what do you need them to do?
Well, I'm very grateful if they enjoy the book and think this is an important book, you know, to go on sites like Amazon or Goodreads and to give it, shall we say, better reviews than 1-star reviews, because of course that brings the thing down. I've never had so many negative reviews for a book. Normally I have a good sort of 4.5 average, and here it's a sort of 3.7 or less. But so that would certainly help. But yes, I mean, I know that I've been told that Andrew is clinically depressed by this, that he's been put on suicide watch. It's difficult to see that when you see him appear at the...
Do you believe that?
No, I think that's a very useful device to try and get people to back off. I mean, you can be on suicide watch without being suicidal, for example. I mean, yeah. You know, we could be on suicidal watch if people decided that was... that would be a useful technique. I agree. I mean, there was no sign of him at the Duchess of Kent's funeral, but he looked depressed. I mean, he looked absolutely thrilled to be in the limelight again. And where most of us would hang our heads with shame and sneak in the back entrance, there he was up the front doorstep and trying to be center view at both of them. You know, everything is always about them. So, and Sarah Ferguson claims, you know, it's the same old story. We've been there before, particularly after the 2010 News of the World sting, where she was caught trying to sell access to Andrew. She goes and she says, I'm sorry, you know, I had a terrible childhood and I'm getting psychological counseling and I'll never do it again. And that was someone else. So, you know, she'll be playing the same game and she'll be up to the same activities. We saw that with the way that she publicly tried to distance herself from Epstein and yet privately was saying, you know, you're my dearest friend and, you know, we're in this together.
Let it blow over and, you know.
Exactly.
But Andrew, I spent 20 years as a celebrity publicist, and I would frequently, if my client was backed into a corner and it was irreparable, you go to the most extreme place with mental health that you can. And you say, you will push my client to unalive themselves. You will have blood on your hands. And you have to play a really dirty game, because actually your job as the publicist, and it's awful. Like I hated being in this world, but you have to gaslight and shame that journalist and make them so fearful that they will have someone take their own life because of that story. And it doesn't surprise me that's what you're hearing about Andrew, because that is the only place that a publicist or a source that's, you know, a mouthpiece for Andrew, that's the only place they have to go with this now, because of the extent of how bad everything is for them.
Yes, no, I agree. And I mean, wasn't that, who's the BBC presenter, Hugh Edwards, exactly the line they played with him, you know. And time and time again, you know, people, it's only when they're caught, then suddenly they sort of say, well, you know, it's all down, as you say, to mental health issues. I think there's no sign. I mean, Sarah is still going off and doing things. I don't think that, you know, we're going to keep her down. I mean, she's going to bounce back somehow. You know, I think people, they assume people have short memories, and they feel also that they are protected by the palace. And, you know, the extraordinary thing is the press, you know, still give them quite favorable coverage, places like, you know, The Sun for Sarah and other papers. So they know there's always a haven somewhere they can go to.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think Virginia, because she knew that she wasn't well, didn't she, towards, you know, the end of her life, and she'd been working on this book for 4 years, do you think she's left a circle of people with very clear instructions? Because this is going to pull everything apart, isn't it? You know, every lie, every denial. Virginia, this book is coming out. And it was Amy that she wrote the book with, wasn't it, over 4 years. So I would imagine what we will see is the palace try to slander or, you know, squash Amy. But it makes me wonder, has Virginia given clear directions to certain people for, in the event I'm not here, this is my truth and you get it out this way?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, Andrew must have been relieved when she died. I mean, he should be feeling guilty about it. But then to discover that actually she'd kind of spoken from beyond the grave, I think must have come as a big shock to her and to him and to others. I mean, I don't know whether she's left instructions with people. I mean, I hope that having done her book, others will feel, as I say, emboldened to come forward and tell their stories. We've got Juliet Bryant's book, Blue Butterfly, coming out next month, which I understand has a lot of pretty damaging allegations. So, you know, maybe this will, you know, each person stands on the shoulders of someone else, and hopefully that will begin, you know, show that, you know, your argument, people power, that actually the small people can have a voice. And there is a huge appetite to hear this stuff. People are no longer trusting the establishment and people, rich and powerful people. They see how rotten the whole thing is. And they want, you know, they want answers. And we've seen that clearly in America. And, you know, I think the sad thing is that Trump said that he would clear the swamp. And it turned out that he was part of the Trump himself. He was part of the problem himself. So it's it is a slight problem. So
it makes me really feel for the Prince of Wales, because, you know, he is a good man and I believe he will put the country first, and his hands are tied because of where he is in the hierarchy until he, you know, becomes the monarch. And Andrew single-handedly is bringing so much shame. And then we continue to see, because he's on the website, it's almost an endorsement from King Charles.
Well, it's interesting you say he's on the website. I mean, I certainly found that they had removed all traces from him. So, for example, you know, all the past court circulars had gone, because I was keen to see what his movements were. I think one of my concerns is that the court circulars is saying he's in certain places, when actually the evidence separately is he's somewhere else, and they've used this to give themselves cover. And certainly he was wiped, for example, from the Department of Trade and Industry computer. So, you know, that is interesting that he's still there. But I think, you know, I think it is extraordinary that he's still a Knight of the Garter.
I've got it just actually on this tab. So obviously it says on 13th of January 2022, Buckingham Palace announced that with Queen Elizabeth II's approval and agreement, the Duke of York's military affiliations and royal patronages would be returned to Her Late Majesty, and the Duke would not return to public duties. Prior to stepping back from public life, the Duke of York undertook a wide range of public work with a strong economic and business focus. Well, we know that because we know how shady everything was, don't we, Andrew, because of, you know, yours and other people's findings. And then we have a screenshot of the statement from Buckingham Palace, and it goes down giving a history of, you know, his role as special representative for international trade and investment. And there's a branded picture of Picture Palace, the very, you know, event or charity. Was it it was a charity endeavour, really, wasn't it? It was set up.
Well, Picture of the Palace was meant to be a charity. It was registered as a charity. It was held at Buckingham Palace and St James's Palace and actually hosted often by the Queen. And the idea, which is a very worthwhile one, was like a dragon's den to bring entrepreneurs and investors together. And it did a lot of good work. But what they didn't realise is in the small print, Andrew put a clause saying that all the 2% of the investment would be siphoned off into his own private account. With something called Pitchett Palace Global, which is clearly wrong. And this is another classic example of how they use charities to actually disguise their business activities. And it's something that Sarah Ferguson does and the two daughters do. But you're right. I mean, Buckingham Palace need to get a grip on the situation. I mean, they've always taken Andrew at his word. I mean, he claimed that it was a pitch at the Palace interview, which was the Newsnight interview, not that he was talking about Epstein. They believe that he had legitimate sources of income to allow him to stay in Royal Lodge, when I don't think that is the case. And so they've never really asked up. He's never answered truthfully, and they've never really pressed anything and done the necessary due diligence. And they're now reaping, I'm afraid, the result of that, that now what was an Andrew problem has now become a monarchy problem. And the whole thing is snowballing. And I can only see it getting worse unless they really, really seize this thing. And I think it must be very frustrating for the Prince of Wales, because I think he can see what's involved, even if King Charles can't.
It's interesting what you say, Andrew, about royals having charity foundations and the lack of transparency and the financial questions it raises, because I've had a lot of people reach out to me on X to say they have concerns about Harry and Meghan's Archwell Foundation. And obviously, in light of what we've seen with Andrew creaming money from Pitchett Palace, the 2%. Do you think, you know, we need to be concerned about any time we see a royal foundation, or how can we do our research to make sure the numbers are stacking up? Because I think in a time of transparency being needed, it's evaporating very quickly.
Well, ideally, we want the royals to behave properly and not to, you know, do this. And to be able to trust them. The problem is, you know, that I think that trust has been lost now. And that's why the Royal Register would be a way of trying to restore that trust, them being more open. I think having proper scrutiny of their accounts, often they're leaked out, for example, during a foreign trip when all the Royal Rota are abroad. I mean, it's sneaked out often in the summer, the Royal Finances. It's always very opaque, finances, and I noticed this when I researched Andrew and Sarah. They have lots of these companies, but none of them are properly audited because they claim not to be active. So, I mean, I think there are lots of things, but I mean, I think having much more scrutiny of royal finances would I think prevent them from abusing their position. But there are other ways of paying them. I mean, one of the ways is through jewellery. We saw a £18,000 necklace given to Beatrice by Tariq Khatouni, who was a business associate of Andrew and Sarah. They have very close relationships with a number of jewellers. I don't think that's a coincidence. At Sunning Hill, there was a room called Aladdin's Cave, which was just filled with goodies that they had been given. And what often has emerged in tracing Andrew's footsteps is he's not there in the court circular in places, but they have a royal gifts section where they have to declare gifts. And on those occasions when they have declared gifts, it's emerged he's been in somewhere like the Middle East, which wasn't in the court circular. So they haven't coordinated all their stories. So you can sometimes pull things together just from other sources. But I don't think the royal gifts list is comprehensive, just as the court circular list isn't always completely accurate or comprehensive. And what we want is we want them to behave, as Andrew would say, honourably. We want them to be trustworthy. And I think they've got a long way now to go to earn back trust. And that must be really annoying to people like Princess Anne and Prince Edward, who do a really good job and never put a foot wrong. To be brought down by these two grifters.
Yeah. How much of an open secret do you think Andrew's behaviour was and how he conducted himself? Because like you say, some of these allegations are going back decades, and what you found consistently, he behaves the same way. You know, Do you think it was well known within Palace Wars that he was going to see Virginia and things like that?
I don't know about Virginia, but certainly the trade stuff, I mean, you know, they knew who were on these delegations. I mean, stuff would have been reported back by the police protection officers. I know that senior diplomats and others went and complained about his activities, and they were given short shift by the palace, you know, I think by the Queen. So, you know, they knew about what was going on. We just know the Amy Robach story of ABC trying to shut down the Virginia Andrew Epstein story years before it came out shows the palace was exerting pressure. The News of the World had material in 2009, which they sat on. And those are the stories we know about. So we don't know actually what was suppressed. So, yes, of course, they knew exactly what was going on. But the line always is, you know, if you don't get caught, it's fine. And then we'll address it if we do get caught. You know, I was watching The Godfather the other day, and there are a lot of similarities between the royal family and the Corleones. I think it is a swamp and it does need to be cleaned up. And I think people realize that now. You know, you don't need to be a Republican to see that this is very damaging to Britain's reputation and damaging to the future of the monarchy.
And do you think that the same tactics that have been wheeled out to smear your name by the grifty, toxic duo, do you think that will happen to Virginia's book? Because obviously we can't speak to Virginia, but it's damaging.
It was done. Of course it was done. I mean, I've got emails, which I quote in the book, showing Ghislaine, Epstein and Andrew colluding to bring in a PR firm to try and undermine Virginia. You know, at the very time they were publicly saying they didn't know, they never met this woman, didn't know anything about her. They were actually working out how to discredit her. And the campaign goes on. I mean, all these people like Victoria Harvey, on absolutely no evidence whatsoever, have been trying to denigrate Virginia. Even when she committed suicide, they were putting the boot in. I mean, it's appalling. And I don't know why the media give them any airtime whatsoever.
Mm. Well, how does, I'll call her Victoria Hervey because she is no lady, but how does she fit into the Epstein-Ghislaine equation? You know, did she have a role curating certain things, do you think? Or is she just a mouthpiece they can get to fire off?
Well, I mean, it's a very good question. You know, she's ripe for a media investigation. What does she live on? How does she earn her money? Her stepbrother had no money whatsoever. He was bankrupt. Why is she doing this? She claims to be an ex-girlfriend of Andrew. I could find no evidence to support that. Where does she get her evidence? I mean, she very rarely produces any evidence. You know, is this just an ego trip for her? Or is she, you know, paid for example, by the Maxwell family? What are her links to Brian Basham and to Jay Beecher? These are questions I think that the press should be asking. You know, she's trotted out in GB News and various other places. And given the time of day, without providing any evidence, and there's plenty of evidence in my book to show the picture is absolutely genuine, many, many people saw it at the time. She talked about it. We know from a whole variety of sources, witnesses and the flight logs, you know, about Virginia Giuffre's movements. So this is, you know, all part of a campaign to try and undermine Giuffre, because we have to remember, without Giuffre, none of this stuff would have come out. It would probably have still been suppressed. And you know, we owe her a great debt for so bravely carrying on and going public and suffering the sort of brickbats that she got. And I can sympathize, having had a little bit myself, and that is what has scared a lot of people from coming forward. And I hope now, as more and more people prepared to come forward, that you know, we will begin to have some truth told, and many of these people will actually have to face the consequences of their actions.
What has the intimidation been like for you? Because obviously you're in a different position than Virginia, but I can't even fathom what she went through. And so as someone that has been at the hands of the intimidation of the palace and the grifty duo, how has that been for you?
Well, I mean, it just encourages me to go on. You know, I've been saying these things for 10 years. You know, I'm written lots of books, you know, many of them not about the royal family, on completely different subjects. Biography, for example, of Guy Burgess. You know, I'm a trained historian with a doctorate. I am not a Republican. So I am just a historian who has chosen to do a book on these two. And this is the stuff I found, and perhaps being slightly more open about what I found, because what I found time and time again, when I, for example, did my book on Edward VIII, there was plenty of material in the archives showing he was a traitor to this country and a Nazi stooge, which historians had chosen for whatever reason to ignore. It was sitting there in plain view in the archives. But yeah, you know, I think that I have to always be able to have very reputable sources, name sources, double sources. I have to, you know, I hope speak with some measure about the things I found, and to pay due credit when credit is due to the subjects of my biographies, that I'm not out to being vindictive or to come after anyone to do a hatchet job. I'm there just to tell the truth. And as long as, you know, I keep doing this and people kind of understand that and respect that position, you know, hopefully I'm okay. But of course, you know, there will be stuff. I mean, you know, I wait for some scandal to be foisted on me. I've seen it with my own authors working as an agent who have done controversial books, who've had porn downloaded onto their computers and stuff, and arrested and stuff. You know, their hard drive wiped by the police, their investigations. So I'm very careful now to have backups and stuff. But, you know, there's a pretty ruthless operation going on to keep some of this stuff quiet. But, you know, the best
just to go back to that point, you say it so casually, Andrew. I mean, you are one of the best literary agents in the country, and, you know, you have some amazing authors on your books. But that's actually very chilling, that the powers that be, whether people want to call it the deep state or whoever, have the access to do that, to stitch someone up. So they are able to do that, but they are not able to investigate Andrew.
Exactly. Yes. Well, I mean, exactly. I mean, I don't give the man's name, but it was a book on the Guildford Four, a serious author who'd done previous books. And in fact, I think at the trial, he was able to find computer experts to show that this material had been downloaded externally. It wasn't something he'd accessed himself. But without having those computer experts, he would have been basically stuck in prison for kiddie porn. I've seen it with, for example, some of the TV people I've worked with on Mountbatten had break-ins and their houses sort of ruffled over just to show what could be done. I've seen stuff shut down. You know, interviews I've done with papers have never appeared after pressure was put on the owners or the managing directors. There's lots of things that can be done to try and silence people. And that's why it's important that, you know, we all go public, we all talk, we all try and get the stories out, because disinfectant is the best way of dealing with these things. And, you know, the whole theme of my books over, you know, many years has been that the cover-up is often worse than the original offence. And what Andrew and Sarah have done is they keep digging themselves deeper by telling lies to start with. They've been forced to continue to tell lies, and they've been caught out. But, you know, I suspect for lots of people it works. You tell a few lies and people go away and no one realises.
Who do you think, you know, those powers that be are that put that, you know, come in and ruffle a house up or download awful things externally to other people's computers? You know, who would you assume that deep state is?
Well, you know, we've seen it in Nazi Germany, we're seeing it now in Trump's America, you know, that you can put pressure on people, you can suppress the media, you can suppress the judiciary and the legal establishment, you can destroy a civil service, and people are scared for their jobs. So there are all these people, for example, who are now saying, you know, there's no Trump material in the Epstein files, which is not true. People like the head of the FBI and Pam Bondi and others. And these people, in order for their own personal preferment, will basically go along with what the boss says. And if they don't, they're in trouble. We've seen time and time again people getting sacked from their jobs in the Trump administration who have tried to speak truth to power. And that, I'm afraid, is beginning to happen here. So we see the police being used as an instrument not of law and order, but actually of political will. And I see it in my freedom of information work with the judiciary. The judiciary increasingly now will not side on the side of the requester. It's almost always now they will support the public authority and the orthodoxy, because these judges, partly that's how they're appointed, they won't appoint clearly mavericks, and these people know which side their bread's buttered, you know, if they want to get their pension and their gong. So all these things are often, you know, very, you know, cleverly disguised. You know, there is talk of bringing a private prosecution against Andrew for corruption in a public office. But, you know, one of the problems there is that this will then be pushed across to the Crown Prosecution Service, and there will be ways for the government to basically shut this story down. You know, I think what people don't realise is the very close links there are between the Cabinet Office and the Royal Household. Many members of the Royal Household have intelligence links, for example. Many politicians are appointed to the Royal Household, people like William Hague. And that's one reason why they kind of keep quiet. William Hague knows a lot about Andrew's activities as special trade envoy, but he's never going to talk. And so there are ways, you know, through patronage or pressure of keeping people silent. You know, it's
I think when the Prince of Wales takes the reign, I cannot see any of this happening. And I think he is going to absolutely cut it and slice it up and just... He knows exactly what he wants, because we recently saw an interview with him and he could not have been clearer that he's not going to be playing these, you know, games with the mainstream media, and he is not going to be just a ceremonial king. And so I just put my faith in him and Catherine, because this just makes me furious, Andrew, that, you know, the very people, the police, the very people we should go to that are to keep us safe, ultimately it sounds like they're in cahoots to frame people or squash people or intimidate people because of the powers that be right at the very top of the pyramid. And
well, I said that for a long time, I said this for a long time, that we live in a sort of banana republic, and actually a lot of the civil liberties that we think we have, we don't have. You know, we've seen the destruction of archives. We've seen the curation of the historical record, you know, to protect people. You know, I don't think we should be surprised by some of this. I mean, I don't know what we do to change it, but we live in an increasingly authoritarian country. I don't think people have really woken up to that fully, sadly, until those liberties, you know, they suddenly realize how those liberties affect them and they've gone. You know, that's why it's important that there is, you know, free speech. You know, we respect people's positions as tolerance and respect, but at the same time that we are able to speak openly about things. But, you know, the establishment is very powerful and they have lots of tools that they can use to bring people into order or to encourage people to behave the way they are. I'm just amazed that people do seem to be excited by getting the, you know, the CBE or an ITUD or whatever it is. And I think, you know, hopefully in a modern democracy, we'll kind of see beyond that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because what I see as the CBE and OBE, I see it as that little spider web just keep getting bigger and bigger and having something over those people in power. And if, you know, if you start looking down that rabbit hole and you look at the positions of power these people hold, there's that invisible bond between those people and the establishment that has a kind of a little bit of control over them. And I think as well, just to end, that, you know, Andrew gets this protection because there is no transparency. You know, there's the Freemasons, there's the Fabian Society, there's all these little secret societies, and ultimately they're all covering for each other. And Andrew will never be tried like a normal member of the public. He will, I don't think, will ever see justice when it comes to him.
No, I agree with you there. I mean, I think, you know, to put a member of the, that, you know, the feeling is that the royals are above the law. And I mean, that clearly cannot be true. You know, and if we have an independent police force, an independent judiciary, then, you know, he should certainly be investigated, I think, both of them. And I think, you know, there may well be a case, certainly with him. But, you know, it's not going to happen. There will be low hanging fruit that they'll pick off. You know, the establishment is very adept at protecting their own.
More performative BS we shall see. But Andrew, tell people, how can they follow you? And also, this is a call to anyone in Thailand. We need to get Andrew this information, or actually wherever you are in the world, follow Andrew on X. Give me a follow on YouTube. I'm Lauren the Insider. And Andrew, what's your handle on X?
I think it's just Andrew Loney. If they put Andrew Loney, they'll get me. And yes, that's probably the best way to reach me. I have a TikTok, Substack rather, thing.
Again, on TikTok?
I am, yes. Oh. They can see little videos. So I think, I can't remember what it's called. I'm not very technical, but I have an unusual name. So if you just Google me, I will come up in lots of little occurrences. But that would be great. And I think, you know, support with the reviews would help. Because I think it would show them that they can't beat me. I know they can't beat the great British public or the world public and suppress this stuff coming out.
Well, you're doing amazing work, Andrew. And, you know, why I love you is you are doing the work that we want to see. You know, and I do believe that if you had found really positive things on the toxic duo, you would have presented them. And there were a few times in the book that I thought you were positive about them. And I thought, yes, I wouldn't have had the power to do that. I would have just gone for them.
No, no, I have tried to balance it. You know, I've tried to give them credit where it's due. But I think the problem I found, for example, in a naval forum recently, 180 people wrote about having served with Andrew. 180 were critical, and only one was positive. So that's the sort of, those are the sort of statistics one's dealing with, I'm afraid.
Well, look, everyone, get onto Amazon. You rate this book, you comment, and let's show that Arab billionaire that they have allegedly hired to smear and to discredit Andrew Loney. We will show them who is boss, because we the people have the power, Andrew, don't we?
Well, that would be great. Yes, people power.
Awesome. People power. Thank you as ever. And guys, head and get Andrew's book, either the audiobook or the hardback, and the paperback will be out next week. Thank you so much, Andrew.
Okay, it's paperback next summer, but there's certainly an ebook.
Did I say next week? I meant next summer. I wish it was next week. All right, thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot. Nice to talk to you. Bye.